I'm using the Obsec Dynasty. That's what I call it, spelled with a KH at the end.
Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Beelzebub All Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey everybody.
Red Powell and Adam Camilleri.
Hello.
Oh hey.
It's going to be a great show. We're going to be tackling a pretty important topic about the fight last mechanic. We'll be talking kind of how it relates to Chaos Space Marines, because it seems like if you are what might be considered a bad guy in Warhammer 40,000, then you're a good candidate for having the fight last ability somewhere in your list of tricks.
This is 100% correct. It feels like no matter what you play for Chaos Space Marines, if you're playing into what they do well, which seems to be they're more, I don't know about your guys' perception, they're more combat orientated than their less spiky cousins, but it's kind of like they're the other side of the coin to that, whereas they don't have a whole army that can be made of premium shooting assets. They're more likely to have a bunch of premium melee assets and then a couple of shooting backline support options. But it feels like if you really lean into the fight's last stuff, I think Emperor's Children might do it the best. You just have it on tap. Just at any point, at anywhere, at any time, you're just you fight's last, you fight's last, you fight's last. Ha, happy days.
I'm absolutely terrified of the amount of fight last in the game that I think people are going to be doing as playable factions. You've got things the Ferryman in Death Guard, which can extend the range of the Putrefier to extend his what would be a 3-inch bubble of fights last, so sometimes difficult to get to a 9-inch, so much more reasonable and realistic to be played. And we talk about the ATC. Some folks are leaning into that if they're taking Death Guard with on mass Plague Marines. In the Chaos Space Marine book, was there 5 or 6 ways to get fight last accessible, things that you will actually take if you are playing those factions to the point you were making, Adam?
Yeah, it just feels like you have a unprecedented amount of control in the combat phase, should you want to lean into it.
Yeah, so we were talking about Emperor's Children there for a second, and I guess we can start with them. There are multiple ways they can get it.
I agree with Adam. I mean, for the hard time I was giving him, he's right. Emperor's Children has at least 3 ways that I know of. There's a stratagem, a warlord trait, and Lucius the Eternal, if I'm not mistaken. That's 3 different ways that they can do that. And I think that's pretty remarkable in and of itself, that just that one army can do it 3 times. In a lot of cases of combat, there's just not that many combats going on to say that. I really think that 3 is a very effective number, that you could probably cover a lot of your melee in that case.
This is what I was saying about how I was terrified.
Where's this mythical army that's going to put you in 4 premium combats where you need a 4 source? It kind of just is not a thing that happens very often, if not at all.
I'm
when you're also already fighting first.
Yeah. So in a Blood Angels army, which I was going to mention Blood Angels, is that I have plenty of combat units, but getting there and having multiple ways to make them to nullify their charging, Blood Angels don't really have a lot of efficient ways to get a fight first mechanic outside of charging, nor do they have any fight last abilities quite accessible. So it's jumping into a different kind of pool.
100%. These guys feel like they are the anathema to that kind of a mass aggressive melee playstyle. It's kind of crazy to think that you could, as a Blood Angels player, or it goes for White Scars, it goes for Jakara, it goes for Orcs, could just wholesale charge an Emperor's Children army, and then it's essentially their fight phase, because they're going to fight you first on just about every front. Maybe you fight once in interjecting and interrupt between all their bits and pieces, but it just feels kind of crazy.
Well, and they get to choose what I might get to fight with, and so it would obviously be my worst thing.
Literally the worst situation in the world for you specifically, Paul. I do love, praise be to whoever wrote Lucius the Eternal's rules, because that guy has been begging for a decent data sheet for generations of humanity almost, and he's finally got one. I think he's very good on the table, to be honest.
He made it.
I'm really keen to see. I would love a new model, but I don't hate the old model, funnily enough. Like, I couldn't say that for some of the older, you know, special characters from the notable legions.
Yeah.
But, man, I actually don't hate Lucius's model.
Oh, he's cool looking model. Even he's always been cool looking. Cool character, too. It's one of those, he's a character in the Horus Heresy books that they stat check other characters with.
Like the Avatar of Kane?
The Avatar King is the stat check for Primarchs. Mm-hmm. Lucius is the stat check for mere mortals.
Are you about did you beat up Lucius? Tick box. Cool.
Some characters.
It's the way of adding gravitas, right?
Multiple times. Yeah.
It's so whack.
Emperor's Children have a several cool mechanics, and the one we're talking about for the fight last is Spurific Gaze. Use this stratagem at the start of the fight phase. Select one Emperor's Children character model from your army. Then select one enemy unit within 3 inches of it. The enemy unit is not eligible to fight this phase until after all eligible units from your army have done so. And that's specifically off a character. And it is 2 CP, so it's not necessarily free and maybe not something you could do quite as often as you might expect it to be done.
Yeah, I mean, there is a little bit of agency for the aggressive player in this situation. You know, I'll probably keep referring to who's the aggressor here. Like, if you were the Blood Angels player in this situation, generally speaking, unless their army is, you know, Bikes, Warp Talons, Raptors primarily, you can dodge a lot of these interactions in places. But the thing is, when they take Abaddon, they take Lucius, they take a Lord Disco, and then they clump up four or five units around them and just march that into the middle of the table on a five objective mission. It's not uphill, it's straight up for you as the opposition.
You've got to engineer. You can't charge multiple units. You have to charge one unit with three or four things. Mm-hmm. And that's a nightmare scenario.
Yeah, it is. It's also do Sanguinary Guard don't have combat squad, do they? Like a lot of specialist units, I know Wolfguard don't get to combat squad either.
You'd see a lot more 10-mans if they did.
If they did, yeah, because this is a time when you don't want a 10-man to go in, because the whole 10-man gets to fight last, and maybe a whole 10-man gets picked up before they get to even activate. Whereas technically you could have four, five-mans, you know, maybe you take a couple of units of Vanguard veterans and split them up, or even the new really well-priced Assault Marines to soak up some of these fights lasts, and then you can go in and maybe you get to have a little bit of a say on these big premium Chaos units before they get to interject.
Lucius the Eternal has the Lash of Torment at the start of the fight phase. You can select one enemy unit within 3 inches of this model. Unit is not eligible to fight this phase until after all eligible units from your army have done so. So another like fight super last. Talk about assault armies benefiting from bringing most of their points to bear in the assault phase. What I mean by that is them charging multiple things. Like, you really forcing 1,800, 1,500, 1,600, even 2,000 points directly into the face of your opponent with the idea that you're charging multiple things, making it difficult to deal with. This is essentially blanking about 600 points of that with casual stuff this army may have just baked into it already.
Yeah, spot on. They may just already have it.
And this is just the Emperor's Children. There are lots of bad guys with fights last. And in the Chaos Space Marine book, I believe there are several more legions that also get this fight last ability.
But in addition to that, there are other mechanics which will kind of emulate the same position that Emperor's Children put you in. Well, firstly, on the aggressive footing in this exchange, we have, in the legion kind of lexicon, we have Red Corsairs who just have army-wide advance and charge. Like, that's very relevant for getting things on your terms and getting the fight phase, you know, going your way. And then in addition, we have Creations of Bile who have fight on death. So you can kind of just perpetually trade up almost in that fashion.
Yeesh. Night Lords have Dirty Fighter, which is a warlord trait. At the start of the fight phase, you can select one enemy unit within 3 inches. That unit's not eligible to fight until all eligible armies from your army or units from your army have.
Night Lords. Yeah. Night Lords are the cool. Not loads of the coolest. Just everybody knows.
I know that there are people have feelings about the helmets from the conversion kits. I'm gonna say I've always liked them.
I like the 30k ones a lot.
I'm talking about the 40k ones.
Huge bat wings.
Huge bat wings and everything.
If they're used tastefully, they're pretty good. I mean, I'm a Dark Angels player, so winged helmets is like my freaking.
That's your jam.
Butter. It's my jam.
I'm with you. I've seen them painted very well, too. Always helps.
Can I play devil's advocate here for a second?
Yes.
Is this about the helmets?
No, it's
sorry, I got excited.
If Fights Last is a really strong mechanic, why are Space Wolves not doing better?
Fair. It's very fair.
So I think that's a great point, Tanya, and that actually takes me to why I think it's so great for Chaos Space Marines specifically, not just because of fight, like that aspect of being able to manage things and do that is only just that, just one aspect of it. And when you start to take it and you put it together with a lot of the other elements that Chaos Space Marines have available to them right now. So going back to, you know, a unit that can have it with a stratagem and then the character with the warlord trait and Lucius. So what Chaos Space Marines has this ability to do is you're looking at there is the Black Rune of Damnation, which is -1 to wound. There is Acolyte powers that can make you -1 to hit. You can just keep stacking all these different things on top of it until you get to the point that you have essentially this one core unit that is so strong, so durable, and then you're able to deliver these characters that can then just do that much more on top of it because of that one aspect. You can control the fight phase with it, and then you have all these other things. It's not just that. I think it's a great element to focus on because it is pervasive throughout different parts of the army, but you can really double down on a lot of the benefits that the Chaos Space Marines have on top of this. And I think you're going to see with Abaddon, with this, I mean, because you can just imagine this really durable Terminator unit or possessed or what have you that can just take on all sorts of pain and just weather it. And then you've got to fight, say, you know, Disco Lord, Abaddon and Lucius, and two of those make you fight last, and the other, you know, it's just the pacing of it, I think, is really well put through. If you can stack all this different synergy, there's a lot of power that goes into a few things to get, I think, things done with the army. I think it's important to highlight that. But you bring up a great point, Tanya, and again, going back to it, it's not just that one aspect. It's cool, it has a lot going for it, but it's not the only thing. And I think as you bring in some of these other aspects, it really rounds it out.
Well, I think Space Wolves is actually a really good comparison for some of these builds, because Space Wolves has a lot of the elements. It has a couple of sources of fights last, usually two. It can bring to bear three, depending if they're using judicious or whatnot. And then they have the fight on death from Wolfen and things of that ilk. I think one of the issues with Space Wolves at the moment is that their best melee unit equivalent, the Thunderwolf Cav, has a lot of downsides mechanically. The points aren't too bad at the moment. They're okay. They're not. I think it could still go down a few more. But mechanically, they're on that gigantic freaking base. They're on the Dreadnought base, guys. They're on a 60 mil base.
It is 60 mil, yeah.
And they're cavalry, so they can't go through walls like an infantry or a beast or a swarm can. So they're just unwieldy. But Wolfing is a great example. And of course, Space Wolves have quite good Terminators in addition. So it is a really good comparison. I do think Space Wolves suffer from a little bit less points efficiency. They also suffer from not having a Baton, you know, that's just the thing that they don't have. You know, I suppose you could take Gilliman there, but he doesn't do anywhere near as much for Space Wolves as a Baton does for all Chaos Space Marines.
Anything with Chaos in it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. In addition, there's, I suppose, if you were to just break down the amount of relevant stratagems that, say, Empress Children have, they Space Wolves don't have a delivery stratagem, which is, I think, one of the things that really holds them back as a melee, as a pressure aggressive list. Like White Scars have a built-in with the advance in charge. Blood Angels have, well, everything has a jump pack and has +1 to charge and advance by default, +2 from a relic to move. Space Wolves don't really have anything to increase their odds of making it to the phase in which they are built to do all the damage. So I feel like it's always a bit of a handicap there. Now Empress Children have, you know, Honor the Prince still, which is possibly one of the best delivery stratagems we've seen, especially from reserve, where they just get to have an auto 6 on one of their charge dice.
Honor the Prince is a good one, and we break that down in detail here in a minute, but it does essentially just give you a 6 off the 2d6. So you're rolling a d6.
Yeah, I think the quality of, like, I'm nail on the head. Well done, Tanya, because that comparison is actually kind of perfect. Because when you look at those two things, it's very clear to see that the comparisons, all the main points are there. It's the quality of life stuff that the Space Wolves don't have. the little things that just make them more efficient at getting to where they do the work. No one has ever been like, oh, space wolves aren't that killy. You know, that's just not a thing they say. It's more like they're like, well, I can just hold them off until turn three and then like maybe two units make it of their whole army, you know, that kind of stuff.
You can kill Wolfen with bolters too, which...
That's true. You can't say that for possessed or termies now with the new data sheets.
But that's the Space Wolves. I agree with it. That's a great comparison. And I think Space Marines in general seem to be struggling with taking advantage of that. So you don't see a lot of the Judicars or Juiciers building and making their way in the list. I said a couple times I can choose which one I want in the edit.
Yeah, that's right. You better leave that in.
Space Wolves are very strong and actually had a test game against a Space Wolf player a week or so ago. And I think the composition of Space Wolves lists are going to change to include more like Rune Priest than there have been before. But that Feist Last is still critical. It's just how do you engineer it to take better advantage of it? And maybe the whole nature of the game is changing a little bit.
Yeah, you guys Red and Paul, for those you don't know, are playing on the same ATC team this coming weekend in Chattanooga, which is a name I adore. It's
about an hour north of me. It's a good city. It's cool.
So it seems like in a team's lineup, especially having an army that just has a bunch of fights last, and then you can try and pair it into other people's, you know, punchy melee armies and just be a bit of a foil. Is that something you guys considered?
It is. We are taking the ferryman.
Yeah, Paul, did you bring a judiciar?
No.
Oh, well, I guess we missed that one. Huh? Shame.
We have a Death Guard list on the team built to take advantage of that.
Okay.
That's true. We got that one. And then I did bring, we haven't gotten to it. I know we were going to cover this. I know it was just in the next in the like list of other armies that have fight last, but I did bring the Silent King. So
yeah,
we'll talk about the ATC after we cut to break. That'll be part of what we come like list design and team tournaments and that kind of stuff. I want to walk through the,
oh, I've just wet the whistle, you know, reason people stick around.
It's a teaser. Yeah. The fight first versus fight last. How do those things even interact? How does always fight first interact with always fight last?
I always feel like you have to go to the local seer in your village and consult them, cross their palm with silver, and then see who gets to fight first. I've got this mechanic, but they've got that mechanic. And
one of my best performing YouTube videos ever is a description of how that works with a diagram.
Let's hear it. I know we've talked recently about where people could find some of the other things that we do, but you do some different things we have not brought up recently. You're on YouTube weekly, and then you've got your other show.
Yes. So I do like a little talk show where I don't want to say interview because it's more like a conversation with interesting people in the hobby. But I also do these little shorts. They're like very small 60-second videos where I explain weird rules interactions in the game. And it actually takes me a lot of research to put these out. And I sometimes have to pull multiple tournament organizers to figure out exactly how these rules play. And that particular video, it took me probably a week of research and asking people to figure out exactly how it went. Like I had to like pull up the FAQ and like cross-reference with the book. And it's a really hard mechanic to grasp. I'm glad I made that video because I had no idea how it worked before. But yeah, those are just some of the things that I like to do.
It's Be Nice, Roll Dice. And then you're also on Skari's like paint chat.
Yeah. So every Thursday and Friday, Skari and I, we just sit down and paint stuff and talk to cool and interesting people in the hobby. And our last guest was Graham McNeil, and it took every fiber of my being to not fangirl the entire time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so right. That was pretty amazing.
So lay it on us with this fight first versus fight last.
So basically, if you look at any two sides of a combat, you can... I actually drew like a little chart with like the attacker on one side and the defender on the other, charger and then the chargy. And basically, it's like a ladder that you can move up and move down based off of you know, relics and warlord traits and charging and all of that. So everybody kind of starts off and fights normal. And if you have a fight's first relic or you charge, something like that, it puts you up into fight's first. If you put fight last on somebody else and they go from the fight's normal down to fight's last. If you put a fight's last onto something that is charged or has fight's first, then they move down into fight's normal. And then when you're starting to activate your units, the fight's first units, they start with the player whose turn is taking place in terms of your activations back and forth. And then in fight's normal, it starts off with the player whose turn it is not. They get the first choice, and then you alternate back and forth. And then in fight's last, it goes back and it starts with the player whose turn is taking place. They get to make the first decision, and then you alternate back and forth.
There is a designer's commentary on this interaction that is on the Warhammer Community FAQ page. It is under the core rulebook FAQ, and then there is a designer's commentary that details always fights first versus fight last. So if any of that was like mystified at all, then that's a good place to go check. But exactly, you figure out what the total is, whose turn it is, go from there, and then you battle. Now we go back to the nitty gritty, how this is terrible for Bullet Angels with like five fight last abilities. Well, it's terrible for any assault armies that don't have a way to interact with it. And right now it seems like there are more ways to cause it than there are to, I guess, waylay it.
Yeah, I mean, so we're in a point of the game where characters, special characters in particular, are having to, special characters are getting a new lease on life, and every other character is having to justify their spot. Having a source of fights last, I think, if you are a melee army, could almost be ubiquitous. It could be a thing that you actually just need to have now. Dark Eldar bring it by default because you probably bring Incubi. Maybe you bring Drazar as well. You can have other sources like the Archon with the Ancient Evil Warlord trait. You can have a couple in there. So you're probably fine by default. But Black Templars, like I was looking at my Black Templars list. I'm like, I think I need that Judicia back. I think I just need my 6-inch heroic intervention, possibly can devout and devout push Judicia back. Otherwise, I just have zero agency. I can just have an assault-based army that doesn't get to have a say in that one phase, which feels horrible.
Yeah, if you could just throw a jump pack on any of those delivery sources.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as bad for Templars, because most of our big, you know, big Crusader bricks were walking up the table together anyway, so it's kind of everybody's all in it in the pile. But yeah, for your guys with the jump packs, like you really wish, you're gonna take an Impulsor just to put your Judicia in it to drive it around. That feels bad.
You never know. I mean, you put some Blade Guard in there. There's ways, but since I think that it may cause a change in list design, and or at least if it's not going to change the list design, then folks need to be aware that it's out there and how to but potentially work around it. And really, it's hard to work around it. You've got to double or triple up on the charges, you know, getting into close combat, or you've got to figure out a way to help them to asking your opponent, like in the Emperor's Children example, a couple of the fights last are delivered by characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how to potentially get those characters out of position or picked off beforehand. So, you know, maybe eliminators.
Yeah. Bodyguard ain't what it used to be. You can just try and pick them off. I mean, Abaddon's, okay.
You're not killing him with snipers.
Stepping onto my soapbox a little bit, I wish on the G-Dub whiteboard there was just a rule that stayed there all the time, and it was that wound bracketing should not go on something that is below 9, a character below 9 wounds. Because if you can bodyguard something that has, I was of the assumption that as soon as we saw the wound cading mechanic, and if those of you don't know, that's, you know, the mechanic that says you can only take X, Y, Z wounds per turn. It was per phase. It was a way of us getting Ghazghor on the table, playing with Primarchs in an edition where weapons profiles are extremely pushed, extremely strong, you know? If Ghazghor didn't have wound gating, if he didn't have, you could only take X amount of wounds per phase, you couldn't take him. He'd be 2 multi-melters away from death at all times. But because he has that, he's phenomenally strong and powerful model. And I assumed that was because they were going to use that exclusively on things that you couldn't bodyguard, you couldn't protect. Oh, your opponent always gets to shoot at them, but they can only do so much damage. So it's a bit of a skill check for your opponent and you, trying to keep them safe. When do you use them? How many, you know, how can you heal them, dodge damage in a phase or two, stuff like that. Then you put it on a Baton who has 9 wounds, and you can hide him behind, you know, Terminators that are extremely hard to kill, or vehicles, or whatever.
He's not hiding.
And no, he's not. He's standing there doing exactly what he should be doing, because as far as I can tell, if he makes it to turn 3, he almost can't die, you know? He's just like, he's added enough to the army, he's buffed and killed and done crazy amounts of work for you, and then your opponent still can't kill him. Like, you know, it's extremely difficult to remove that guy. I saw him played last weekend, and I played a couple of games into him, and I had no answers. I had zero answers for that dude.
Well, we're getting this. Belinda, I don't want to get too off topic here, but
yeah, sorry, that was I just needed to step up for a second and say that, because I need to say it somewhere publicly.
Everyone knows Abaddon is good. But with this invention, or certain invention, but advent of these abilities being brought into the game, and if your army doesn't have a way to deal with it, I think you have to rethink it. Now, I don't know that, you know, a vehicle with a guy, with some other walking guys, if you don't have a walking folks inside, is the answer. But if that's all you got, that's all you got. If your only plan, or your best plan at its core, is not a very good plan, it's still the only plan you got. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're
something's better than nothing.
To my Astra Militarum soul.
So it is out there. You're going to see more of it. There will be some cool things. And in this Cast-Based Marine Codex, I believe there is a fair amount of depth, and you will see people experimenting. There is, you can make a case, I think, for every legion in here.
Yeah, I believe that. It's kind of becoming accepted that Night Lords have possibly the weakest legion trait, but it's well balanced in the fact that they have everything else they have. Their stratagems, their warlord traits, their relics are all extremely good.
Well, some of the base, just generic chaos relics that you get access to, you know, there's no slouch.
Nah, not at all. Oof, they're great.
I mean, there's ways to super beef up, you could essentially turn a chaos lord into a squad of Terminators.
He can't have a jump pack, though, and that's sad.
He doesn't need it either. When he teleports and, you know, gets to charge into ruins for people. What does he need it for? He's going to pound to death with all kind of crazy weapons. But Chaos-Based Marines are going to be a real threat. I like that, by the way. This is not like anything other than just a warning to anyone that may be facing Chaos-Based Marines. I've been on record many times saying I love it when the game has cool, strong bad guys, and Games Workshop has delivered.
I hope that you're saying bad guys in air quotes.
I am.
Yeah.
Everything's relative.
I think bad guys is just everyone.
Yep.
At this point, it's undeniable that Night Lords are bad guys, right? do we need to debate the Night Lords' bad guyness? I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure as soon as you start flaying, there's no coming back. It's not like, this is enough for debate anymore.
As soon as you start to wear someone else's face, you kind of fall into this one category.
There's a tipping point somewhere around there where.
So then Dark Eldar are also the bad guys.
Drukhar, you're high up on the face wearing bad guy list.
They like wearing faces.
Yeah, that is the truth. Speaking of bad guys, or let's say perspective, I think we kind of need to talk about a certain model that got preview pictures of.
Oh, my Lord. If Cabanda wasn't enough to wet your corn whistle, Angron. Oh, Red, please. This is your time.
It is. I mean, I was pretty excited. I think we all kind of thought that Angron was, I think a lot of people thought Cabanda was going to be Angron, right? Like when a lot of those things were being previewed. And so it was exciting to see that they dropped that. However it came about between the leak and then if, you know, that prompted the article, or if it was a crazy conspiracy plan by GW, whatever. Good on him. I think that it turned out awesome. I think that Angron, you can lay it out next to his old 30K artwork, and I think it fits pretty well. I think that they did right by it. I will say that, you know, by all means, like that, I'm not complaining, but I will say that looking at it, there's not too much variation. Like he does just look like a bloodthirster, right? Like if you didn't know that there was an Angron, that could just be another bloodthirster, right? Mm. I mean, yeah, tell me I'm wrong. Like between Cabanda or the other bloodthirsters or Scarbrand, he's not that far removed from it, right? And so Magnus and Mortarion and the future sculpt of Fulgrim, I'm sure, are very distinct, unique, and they really stand out for their specific chaos gods. And I just don't know if I mean, like, look at Mortarion versus a Great Unclean One, right? Very completely removed from one another. I can't say Angron fits that same kind of deal. And I'm not that, like, that's not messing me up at all. I just, that was something I noticed when I looked at it.
Sound pretty shook.
It's, again,
no,
like,
I'm kidding.
I mean, you know, he's a souped up bloodthirster.
Well, so I believe that in the like Visions of Heresy books, there were pictures of Angron after he'd gone full demonhood.
There were. There
and
were.
I can't remember the description in the book, and I won't say which book, but there, let's just say you get a picture and know what happens to Angron.
Well, I mean, from that, you know, by the time you get to the Siege of Terra, he's already there, right? We know that's where he's at. Saturnine has him on the cover, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And you get the idea of it. And I think that he's right into it. You can see the Butcher's nails and everything. I think it's very cool. Again, I think they did really well by the concept art of him. I'm really excited to see how he plays and what that goes into. Because, you know, looking at a lot of the World Eater stuff that was in the index, there wasn't a lot of significant changes. And as I've stated before, I really think just beyond giving Berserkers two wounds, I feel like they actually kind of went in a downgrade because they lost fight twice. But given that, I'm really interested to see the direction that the World Eater's Codex is going to go. And I'm imagining, I mean, because you can also have Abaddon. So Angron is going to be a very interesting addition to the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate.
I'm pretty excited.
Too much, yeah, because we know nothing. Talk about the model here, is that I do correct. Consider Angron a tragic character, and
100%.
Some of that tragedy doesn't come through in the model, but I also think that Angron is probably quick to vacate humanity.
I think it's funny you say that the tragedy doesn't come through in the model, because I actually think it does.
Okay.
He's like kind of hunched over. He looks like he's a cornered animal in a way.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So to me, I do see somebody who has been maltreated for a good portion of their life when I look at that model.
With these things, you know, when you get them in your hand, sometimes the model just takes on a totally different life of its own. I don't know that Angron out has ever really portrayed that tragedy or shown it outside of Rage, and this is definitely one of the personifications of Rage.
I get what Red's saying, though. Like, if you were just to, essentially, apart from his head, apart from, like, the only thing that screams Angron to me, I mean, I guess it's not even the axe, but I guess Gorefather does. And the nails coming out the top of his head. Like, if you just put a different head on him, is the job done? Is it just a bloodthirster at that point?
The armor is very much in line with the 30K model.
It is. Yeah, too. No, and yeah. I admit, when it dropped, when they started showing the images, that's actually what I went for. I was not looking at his face. I was looking at the shoulder pad. I was looking at the brace behind him. I was looking at that, like, that part of his armor, because that's what I was looking more so for. I really like the details when you look at Magnus or Mortarion and how that they developed and what they brought forth from their, not necessarily 30K models, but 30K builds, right? Like the horns for Magnus, some of his armor plates and whatnot. And then you look at Mortarion, his pistol and his scythe and all that material. It's all there. I do think that they did a good job. You can tell, like, there is... It would be, I think we remember when we were joking a while ago about Uriel Ventress and like having to, if you wanted to take all the Ultramarine stuff off of them, like how difficult that was going to be. I think that Angron's in that boat to a certain degree. It'll be, he has so much World Eater stuff on him to an extent that is built into his armor. But I also don't think that stuff is that remotely, it's not removed from Khorne either. And so, but it does look good. I think that they definitely,
it's glorious.
Yeah, you could put, I think, the old or the 30K Angron model and then look at this Angron model and you can see the direct port from his armor there to what he's wearing now.
He does not skip wing day.
he does have some crazy like muscle definition on his wings. I saw that. I was like, man, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, scar brands are all like messed up and jacked up, but the detail that they went into between that and then looking at the bloodthirsters, since I have a number of them, I'm pretty sure I'm pretty close. You know, in the lore, Angron has like 12 bloodthirsters that hang out with him. I'm pretty sure I could pull that off. Nice. I can't fit that in a 2,000 point game, but I know I almost have it.
So it's Trapezius or something. He's like Goldberg.
I can feel it. We got like 30 point bloodthirsters coming out. New Chaos Demon Codex just got announced. Who knows what the future brings? Oh. Army of Renown, Angron, 12 bloodthirsters.
If you could get Abaddon, Angron, Magnus, and Mortarion on the one,
that would be cool.
No, that's. I mean, I guess maybe Supreme Command Detachment plus. Is there a super heavy detachment that you can?
Sounds like a lot of points. I don't know. It's a whole lot of points.
Now you say that, I'd love a Black Legion Warband Army of Renown that has a Khorne Berserker unit, a Nurgle unit. Sorry, it has to have one mark of everything, or it has to have one of each of the cult troops. That would be really cool. And well, then bind them together.
The Chaos Powers have pretty much conformed to Abaddon's theory of chaos. And wouldn't it kind of suck if you just showed up on the day they were having that conversation? It's like the worst time to show up out of the warp. That would be terrible. All right, let's take a break. Then we'll come back, talk a little about the ATC and maybe some of the cool stuff.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Thanks for hanging out there for a word from our sponsor. You know, we mentioned this in the first part of the show. ATC is coming up this weekend. So if you are listening to this and you happen to be at the tournament, come on, say what's up to Red Knob. We'll be there.
Man, I wish I was going to be there.
Yeah, it would be cool. We'll have to try to get us all on a team sometime in the future.
So, it's one of those events. To me, it's like it's up there with like Adepticon for those events that I really just need to play in my life.
It's a fun time. It's run by just absolute world-class folks in the hobby. Some of the best people you will encounter in the hobby. It's in a cool local community, but of course attracts people from all over the country. And it's just a fun time. Been going since the very beginning. Always had a blast. This year will be no exception. It's going to be in a actual convention hall. It's been in like different tournament venues, you know, every few years or so, but I think they've finally landed in a, you know, in the actual Chattanooga proper with an actual convention hall attached to a hotel, lots of hotels nearby. I've already checked out. Of course, I did some scoping out. There's some cool restaurants nearby.
Of course.
The food, you know, I'm from the South as well. So the food is, you know, I've got the kind of food around here. So there's nothing that I'm just like desperate to check out that's regional that I don't have locally to me already, but I have tried to find some cool restaurants. Red, we'll have to hit some of these restaurants I've found and we'll report back next week of which ones are the great ones.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
What are you guys playing? Like, what's your team lineup?
Yeah. So we decided to take, you know, Blood Angels. It was a tough call.
Yeah. Long nights debating it. Many comparisons of PowerPoints. I can see how it went.
Yeah, it was. I had to build a strong case for the Blood Angels are actually in a very good spot. And when you can pick your matchups, or I should say you can't really necessarily just automatically pick your matchups, but you have a hand in matchups. And I did debate taking the heavy Castellan Robot Adeptus Mechanicus list, but with Blood Angels being in one of the best spots they've been in recently, I just want to play them. So that went out.
I think that's totally fair.
Also on the team, we have a Chaos Knight player, one Abominate, a bunch of the War Dogs, and like split between Carnivores and the Huntsmen. And we have a Yanari player, which the list is kind of designed to do a bunch of mortal wounds, basically destroys. Just melts MSU units. Does this with psychic powers, Void Raven bombers, Hemlock. I mean, there's just the Incarn, because why not? But essentially destroys MSU style builds, which there are a bunch of those out there. We have Death Guard. I will say a couple of flesh mowers are in the list.
Yeah, boy.
There's the Ferryman also we talked about in the first part of the show, which extends the aura of Viron. What is it? What's the name of the unit? It's the something Virons. That's the keyword for a lot of the elite like solo units that you take to buff the army up.
The elite characters.
Yeah, extend that aura of those things, one of them being the Fight Last aura from the Biologus Purifier. The opposite of what I just said. And then we got Red with the Necrons.
Yeah, it was a tough choice. It was a tough choice. So it really was. Like, I wanted to go guard. I really wanted to bring the Tanith, but after the data slate changes, because of how I had set up the guard, I'm not ready to go in the direction that I really want to go with them, which is I need to put together some more scions and I need to build some more of the special weapons for my infantry, for the Tanith specifically. And I'm not there yet. And also it's a pretty quick turn for me because I'm going to go from here in El Paso. I'm going to go straight into, I'm going to fly to Georgia. I'm going to travel up to Chattanooga. I'm going to come back to Georgia, hang out with my family for a little bit. And then I'm going to go to the Dallas, the Lone Star Open in Dallas. And then I'm going to come back to El Paso. And so like travel wise and everything else, I really don't have a good rig. You know, we've talked sometimes before about how I can travel with checking bags and everything like that, and I don't feel really comfortable with a lot of what I've got going on right now. And so I was having to optimize certain parts. And so after guard, I actually considered corn. I was pretty confident I could make a pretty good run with corn prior to the real, you know, the Space Marine release, along with the World Eaters Index. It would have been a last like hurrah of fights twice Corn Berserkers, which could have been cool. But again, we go back to like the travel and everything. And the list that I wanted to bring had three Dreadclaws, and that would mean some extensive like travel capability.
Some extensive repair, probably.
Right, exactly. And so I was a little concerned about that. So then that brought me into the Necrons. And I bounced around between a couple builds. I actually bounced around. There's a really strong melee build that I was looking at with Novoke and the Silent King and some Scorpec Destroyers, three units of five, and then kind of a mini Silver Tide. So I looked at that, and then I bounced over to a massive Silver Tide aspect, which had four 20-man warrior squads, and then a lot of support built in for them, even to include reanimators. I thought that one could have been cool, but then I ended up settling on Triple Trouble, essentially. It's the Silent King, the Deceiver, and the Nightbringer are kind of the big shakers in the list. And then behind that, I've got two squads of six Scarabs each, and then I've also got two squads of six Locust Destroyers. That's the range destroyers. And then two Technomancers. And so there's a lot. It's a nice little list. I've actually, back when I was vying for the Silent King's throne back in 2019, I was running three squads of Locust Destroyers back then with a kind of Silver Tide up front. And so now I mean, it wasn't a big pull for me to switch. And this is really the first time I'm getting to take my Silent King to a competitive event. So I'm pretty excited about that. I'm really looking forward to it.
Silent King's pretty good, yo.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, there's not as much synergy with this list between what he does for everyone. But it's still going to be pretty fun. I think it's going to be great because, you know, he doesn't buff the Satan by any means. But they're these two, between the Deceiver and the Nightbringer, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it'll be a pretty good list, I think. And with the Necron secondaries, I think I can capitalize pretty well.
It's interesting to see the Deceiver coming back in, because I think that's actually a really clever choice. With the changes to command points, who has the CP to spend on like Phantasm and like the Ultramarines redeploy and stuff like that? So many lists don't have it. So maybe the stocks on a redeploy have just gone through the roof.
I think it's a big, especially again, going to the Necron secondaries and everything, of one of those being board management. I think it's a pretty big deal as far as what we can do with what we have and what they're able to pull off. The Deceivers, and there's not a lot of units of what I've just described. And then also having, I'm using the Obsec Dynasty. That's what I call it, spelled with a KH at the end. It has, you know, it's the everyone is objective secured and they get the 6-inch movement at the beginning of the game. And so with that plus the redeploy, I think that there's a lot of good opportunity to really take some board control initiative in doing that.
Yeah, I love it. The more I think about it, the more I think redeploys are just crazy powerful now, especially in teams when, you know your opponent doesn't have a redeploy to respond to it, or they don't have the CP to do it, or forcing them to in response, you know, like you play against Eldar, they start the game with 2 CP and you deploy into a perfect aggressive position going first. Are they forced then to spend only 2 CP they got to not lose to you turn one? Like, that kind of stuff seems really possible now.
Yeah.
I dig it. I hope we do. I mean, we have thought about the list, of course. Some of it is a little bit about just what you want to play. Some of it is also about how to kind of engage with the format. And for the Angels, I took Dante, a Sanguinary Priest, and the Sanguiner. And I kind of went against some advice I've given in the past of not taking like super beefy, like anything above 7 Sanguinary Guard, because I consider it kind of more win. And in a format like this, sometimes you need a little more win to push you through some of that resistance of what might potentially be a rough matchup, depending on how the pairings had to go. On the Sanguinary Priest, I gave him the Armor Indominus.
Awesome.
And also Rites of War.
Awesome.
I feel like it's one of those things to where with the Sanguiner, you can bring him in, you can do the Sanguiner tricks, like we talked about, coming in as Angelic Sacrifice. Might have to do the same thing with the Sanguinary Priest, but I also want that Objective Secure aura to help maybe flip a round or two. You know, one round or two, keeping the points kind of tight in a the way the rounds are scored is that it's cumulative with your entire team versus the cumulative points of the other entire team. And there's a differential you have to worry about. So 5 points could push you from a draw into a win category. One round of having a primary go your way could be the difference between your whole team winning or losing that particular round.
Is ATC using the WTC scoring, like the differential?
WTC is using something closer to ATC scoring.
Oh, man.
You got to have about 20
one,
points.
Which one was there first, yeah. man? Which one was there first?
The WTC, I think. Was it?
You have to have about 20 points.
The round, otherwise, as in your team versus their team? Yeah. That sounds like a differential.
Yep. And so I figure, you know, why not give you a couple of advantages? If I have a couple of extra Sanguinary Guard, then maybe all I have left at the end of the table, end of the ground or tournament anyway. So why not go a little heavier in that? I did what you have not seen recently, what you will see coming out of a Blood Angel Players is Assault Squads.
Good call.
Got a couple of Assault Squads. Now, they're just 5-man Assault Squads, but there is an Inferno Pistol and a couple of Melting Guns in each.
I think that's a great call. Very, very cheap now for what they can bring to your list.
And there's the way the command points work, especially, and I know we haven't talked specifically about this, but in the Nephilim mission pack, you kind of have to be doing things on the table to even get CP some rounds. Mm. So one is stuff that could do things on the table. I'm actually thinking banners, raise the banners may factor into my secondary strategy more often. Because I kind of want to bait interaction with me, or sometimes be comfortable not doing any interaction on that side of the table. And that's what it's going to take some discipline.
Exactly right. You might find that the pairings go south. You end up versus that, you know, Empress Children list, you know, God forbid. And then you're going to be like, well, I can't go over there, so I've got to stay here. And if I'm staying here, I need some stuff I can do that's going to get me points here. So yeah, it makes sense.
18-inch guns, low quality guns, get it done.
Get in there.
That's the theory behind the list. Those are the list on the team. Really digging the composition of the team. You can't beat the spirit of the event. It's just going to be fun being there and rolling some dice. Mm-hmm. Games on Saturday start at 7:30 a.m. Not super thrilled about that.
Yikes! Why is that? Is there 4 games day one?
So they add in a fair amount of time. Those 2 games on day one, which it starts on Friday.
Yep.
3 games on day two. I'm sorry. Yeah, 4 games on day two, and then 1 game on day three, Sunday.
I actually like that a lot. Yeah, I like that a lot.
It will. It's going to be nice. It's going to be. I think it's a good pacing. It's a little early Saturday, but we'll get through it.
Yeah, it'd be fine. And they also, you know, there's plenty of time for it is player place terrain, so that is something to work factor in time. And then the pairings take a little bit of time.
Yeah, exactly right. And well, pairings wise, I know I'm not going to ask you guys to give away the secrets, but how much work have you put into it?
some have put work into it.
Oh.
But that's okay. And I actually misquoted. It's 2 games on day one, 3 games on day two, 1 game on game three. Or sorry, day three. Yeah. There's some science in between the pairings, but I don't want to say that you have to protect the Chaos Knights, but if you have a list like that in your stack, if you can give them even the slightest favorable matchup, they're going to essentially get hundreds for you.
Mm, yeah, exactly right. You wanna put it where it's gonna do the most work.
Yeah, so we got a good player on Chaos Knights, and that's it. And really where some of the secret sauce is when do you slide them into the stack? Do you because by the time people hear this, tournament's already going on. And most likely anyway, or it's over with. But there is, with the way that the tables are laid out, is it's got that scale of denseness of terrain on each of the tables. And
as in, so it's five players per team?
Yes.
Yeah, so you'll have, what, one heavy, three medium, one light?
Sort of. There'll be one heavier and then descending towards light. I think there are two that are kind of the same, and then it trails off from there. If years past were any indication.
So, if you're going off generalist team stuff, team knowledge, you'd want to put them up early or get them into a pairing early, because then they're more likely to be able to choose their table and not get stuck on the heavy, right?
That's right.
They're not too impeded. Yeah.
Yes, you've cracked the code. But
then again, if you were playing a warglaive heavy, it really depends on the tables. You might walk up to the tables and your knight player is like, give me a heavy, because they've got a bunch of shooting lists, and on the heavy at least I won't lose turn one if I have to take a poor pairing.
Yeah,
right.
And that's the factor. That's the X factor, is figuring out which team. And so what we'll do is, or what we have done, but I've gotten to all the lists, is kind of mentally start categorizing where you place or where you put out the Chaos Knight list, and then what you put with it. Because if you have two lists out, what do you sandwich with the Chaos Knight build to give it to make the players, your opponents, conform to what you want them to do? How do you engineer these pairings? But that's the trick.
It's extremely deep. The pairings process is just something I love. Just seeing how different people approach it. We have some maestros of pairings knowledge in Australia, because of course we love our teams events in Australia. Absolutely can't get enough of them. If I could, I'd play nothing but teams events all year. I just think they are so much fun. And it's interesting because it just goes the deeper, as deep as you want to go. And I think the tipping point is five players for pairings to really start mattering, like how you position yourselves. Add four players, which we play quite a bit of in Australia. There's a system where everyone, at the start of the pairings process, you write down your champion, like who's your champion, and then your champions are the last pairing, they automatically play, and then your second last pairing is automatically paired. So if you can pretty much guess who your opponent's going to use first and who they've got as the champ, everything else falls into play, and usually you'll win it. But then it's like, well, do they know who I think that they're going to think they're going to put as the champion, and that are they going to juke me on the champ and not juke me on the put up and the, it gets so fun.
Yeah, sometimes players
I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Well, they'll peel on the lines. They'll act all nonchalant about putting out something like, I don't care. Here's this list or whatever. It's the social game there that gets played is pretty cool. Plus, going on to the team side of things, that you really are playing with a team. And I will say that part of the conversations that we've had to have with every team every year is, how do you deal with losses, a game loss? And sometimes the position at which you are playing on the team results in you having a struggle in a game. I mean, not with another player, just the list wise. So not a good matchup for you. You have to figure out how to navigate that pairing. And potentially, if you're used to going 4-1 or 5-0 at most tournaments, you might have a harder time. And
I think there was a story of Andrew Gagneau In the 2018 year that the USA won the WTC, Andrew Gagneau essentially, air quotes, went under the bus and took fat L's just about every single game. And that was exactly what the team needed him to do.
It's an exact strategy. The years that I've won the ATC in the past, sometimes it's whoever goes out first, just get 80 points. You get 80 points for winning this whole tournament. It's one of those type situations. And so if you are playing a list that is designed with the idea that it will go out first often, then you have to be in a good mindset to deal with those more challenging games.
Yeah, there's a morale element to teams that there may not be otherwise. But also in teams, you never have more reason to pick yourself up and play again, because you're playing for more than just your results. And
exactly right.
You taking one loss individually doesn't necessarily mean your team loses.
Yeah, you taking that could be essentially sucking down a powerful list that makes the rest of the four matches a cakewalk.
So, in fact, I think it's the most important thing you can do is to, because, so when you say you have a a team's event. So your lineup, yeah, you have Knights and you have Blood Angels, two lists that are conventionally assumed to be aggressive lists to go out and get you the W's, get you the wins. So cool. If they just do what they're expected to do, we have two wins out of five in the bag. Cool. All right. So then we have, but then our opponents are going to have two lists that are going to set up to do the same. So how do we maximize what our ones do and minimize what they do? Because if everyone just does what they expect their results are going to be, everyone just gets draws in team events. You know, where are you flipping the result? Where are you saying that our you know, a fire blanket is going to go over your Blood Angels list and smother their score so that when our Blood Angels list gets a big win and yours doesn't, that means we win the round.
Yeah,
so
somehow we engineer that, I'm playing Tau on the light table, or get paired against the Death Guard with all kind of multiple fight last.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in those situations. Like, how do you gear it to where that doesn't happen? And that's what they're trying to do. So I think what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you go into it assuming that your opponents are of equivalent mindset. They have the same tasks as you.
Yeah.
And how do you reconcile those things?
And that it's the wins aren't the important, because everyone's going to get a couple, unless you just wash around, which is extremely rare. The wins aren't what is important. It's important is how small the couple of losses you're probably going to take are. So the people who are taking losses for you in your team events, they've likely got the most important job.
Yeah. You soaking all this in, Red?
Yeah. I'm trying to. Yeah. I have the most important job. That's what I just took away. Yeah.
People are going to be gunning for the Silent King. That's one of the things. If you take some of the power, some of the
big,
the
beautiful models,
it is a big, beautiful king. There's no denying that. But if you take things that are conventionally known as the big bads in the meta, you know, people are going to gun for it. But at least in the team event, you actually kind of have a way to dodge some of those things that
you do. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's some things we know. We've talked about it, you know, this is not good for my army versus what's not good for your army versus what's not good for somebody else. And you can smartly avoid some of those matches pretty well through the team's structure.
This whole episode has just been a cry for help. Yeah, is that if we come against a Death Guard and a Drukhari player, how do I not fall in the fight's last trap? We shall see. I will be posting to social media, like Twitter. I'll be posting Twitter and Instagram, and try to post on Facebook some pictures from the weekend. So if you're curious about following along and or want to see what happened and what we got up to, yeah, check me out there.
Definitely jump on and follow the boys on BCV as well, which will have all the event standings. You just want to, you know, jump in with your cup of coffee in the morning and see how the boys did in the day previously. I certainly will be.
That's cool.
Better produce. I want results.
We're gonna have a good time, man.
Enjoy yourselves. That's the only result that matters.
Gonna be pushing gold and red and black models across the table. I do have I've got a five-man Death Company unit looking forward to Forlorn Fury.
Yeah.
A lot of players have gone with the Vanguard Vet Squad and loaded up on those, which I think is still a solid buy. I did not go that direction.
Yeah, Vanguard seem weird in a weird place in Blood Angels now that Death Company and Assault Marines are so well priced and well positioned. I mean, they're still not bad, are they? They're still a really, really good unit, right?
Lightning but, Claws, you know, real efficient.
Yes, very, very efficient.
And that's the thing is, I'm not worried about. I should never be in a situation where I'm fighting another Blood Angel army.
Yeah, something's gone terribly wrong, right?
Yeah, we've both screwed up our pairings in some capacity. You know.
Well, that's exactly right, because one of you is getting kind of dunked on. Whoever gets the first big charge off, big wholesale charge, just kind of snowballs the rest of the game out.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about matching up like that. So those Lightning Claws and other things that other people have taken, they obviously have a different idea of what they're, well, they could just be falling back on what their army was 6 months ago, which is also a thing. Sometimes when you come to these things, the players aren't necessarily playing their army. They're playing a position on the team that resulted in them needing to take a certain collection of figures.
Mm.
We have whole episodes on team stuff.
We always did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. I love the aspect of it. And we'll talk, I know probably on the Thursday show this week, if I'm able to get in there with y'all guys this week, we'll probably talk a fair amount about team stuff.
Well, yeah. Like, I think we're only going to do two events this week, because we're going to do like probably two-thirds of the show is just going to be ATC talk.
Sweet. Well, that's our show this week.
Yeah.
It's been a blast. Chaos Space Marines, watch out. The big bad, what is the, are we still on the 13th Crusade? Is that over with?
You know, so one thing we didn't mention about CSM, if I can, you know, prolong this for 5 more minutes. Corn Lord of Skulls is a baller. Be prepared. They like an Iron Warriors Corn Lord of Skulls is a freaking monster.
All right, let's hear it. What's the combo?
So, well, firstly, it's toughness 8 with 30 wounds and a 2+ save. That's just, it's just, that's just the data sheet. It's got the, it's probably got the best shooting profile weapons in the book. Bunch of rend 3, huge amount of shots from 2 different really good weapons. In combat, of course, it's freaking nuts. It gets more attacks as it loses wounds.
The Demon Gore cannon is heavy D6, strength 10, neck 4 AP, D3 plus 3 damage blast.
Pretty solid. And there's a bunch of, there's what's the 12 shot strength 8 minus 3 2 damage?
That's,
is that
the
right?
Hades Gatling cannon. Yep.
And that 3, is 2 damage, strength 8. Everything you want, I think. I love that weapon. Yeah. The right range, the right strength, the right rend. Your Iron Warriors, that guy ignores cover. So that your rend 3 ignores cover. It's amazing. So he's Iron Warriors as well. So you can't reel wounds against the toughness 8, 30 wound juggernaut bearing down upon you. You've got a stratagem for minus 1 damage when people are shooting you with, you know, D3 plus 3, probably not going to make a difference damage profile wise, but D6s, 2 damage, 3 damage, phenomenal. I charged that guy with a bunch of power fists on the weekend and he minus damage, and I went from being like, hey, I'm going to get him dead, to being like, oh no, I made him stronger. I made him more angry. Really, really solid. And then there's a bunch of other ways you can buff that guy up. But
he's got like 4 of the cannons too and a melee profile. Yeah. So that's, we barely scratched the surface on what this thing can do.
But I think that's he's good. He's very strong. You compare that lad, his output, to like a Knight Crusader who is not that much less expensive. I think it's 550 for the Corn Lord of Skulls.
575.
So yeah, it's about what, 30, 40 points between the fully decked out Crusader and this lad. Unless I'm remembering, I think a fully decked out Crusader might actually be about 500 points now. But you get 6 more wounds. You get a better armor save. Or you want to compare the price of this guy to a Castellan, which is probably a better comparison. The Castellan is more expensive. Same armor save, less wounds, no melee profiles worth speaking of.
Well, look at what you can put around it, too. The Corn Lord of Skulls has a better entourage.
Absolutely right. Better support as well. And it's an army that just needs one, you know? It's just one Lord of Skulls, chuck a disco or two behind it, put Abby behind that, couple of rhinos, you
to
know,
this, riding this on the done. Back.
That would be sick. Like, put a little palanquin on the back of the the back of the Lord of Skulls. Yeah. But no, I'm a big fan. That's a list you guys should all be willing to see, because I know so many Chaos players who have that model, and I've just been waiting, just rubbing their hands like, our time has to come eventually.
Tanya, Red, Adam, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to leave us some 5-star reviews. Like, share, subscribe, some thumbs up. We really appreciate the comments that make its way. We also publish on YouTube. Appreciate everybody who's listening this far. We'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Buy a shirt.
Prospect scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.